Free Talk Live.
This is Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. I'm Gardner Goldsmith, and thanks for listening. You can tune in live every Monday through Friday on Rockfin, Rumble, on YouTube now, and my Twitter/X, at Gard Goldsmith. Let's get right into it, talking about how the state engages in war against all of us. It's not just about kinetic war. It's about the eternal warfare of the state and the people who try to operate that machine against everybody. And so we hit the cult, my friends. The cult. I loved it. I guess Robert Plant visited him when they were recording this and said, "Hey, I like what you're doing, man." I think we can understand maybe why Robert Plant might dig it, because he obviously was picking up some stuff from Robert Plant. Baby, 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 baby. It's awesome. All right, my friends, what is first on tap for our warfare against you coverage? Well, we're not going to go directly into the war stuff. We're going to cover a couple smaller stories. And first, we're going to talk about the state and collectivist, you got it, immigration policy. Yes. Walla Voodoo. Can't go wrong with Walla Voodoo. These guys were pretty darn cool. Can't understand just what does that DJ say?
I hear the talking of the DJ. Can understand just what does he say? I'm on a Mexican radio. I'm on a Mexican radio.
Yeah, and that beater car. All right, my friends, fellow conspirators, compadres, quimo sabes, and all that other stuff. Yes, indeed. I will be your Sancho Panza. We will be on this quixotic quest to fight the windmills of the machinery of war and to fight the collectivist approach to migrant control, immigration control, which, as I often tell conservative so-called constitutionalists, means that it's supposed to be a state issue if you want to conform to the Constitution. It has to be a state issue until a state legislature or the governor of a state asks for assistance to protect their so-called constitutional Republican form of government. That's what's in the Constitution. And the word immigration isn't in the Constitution. The word naturalization is. And a lot of people conflate them. Let's look at this one just out from Elon Musk, of all folks. He is calling this one from Bill Melugin, who is with Fox News. Melugin writes this, exclusive, I know, you're going to be shocked. Internal DHS, yes, Department of the Homeland Security, very Teutonic. There's a real constitutional rationale. Oh, no, there isn't. Has there been a declared war? Oh, no, there isn't. That's right. International DHS data, internal DHS data reveals the 45 plus U.S. cities that hundreds of thousands of migrants have flown into via the Biden administration's controversial CHNV mass parole program. The data was obtained by at Homeland GOP via a subpoena to DHS. Remember all the times Jim Jordan kept questioning Alejandro Mayorkas and not getting any information as far as please distinguish between your encounters and your actual deportations, and Mayorkas wouldn't say it. That's because, obviously, pretty much the unspoken understanding was they weren't deporting people. They were sending them to various cities. So if you follow my ex, you'll see that I re-exed that. I Terminator X'd it. And he says, Bill Malugin says it was provided to Fox News. Here's a little bit more, just to give you a little bit more. The top 15 cities migrants flew into and the numbers during this 8-month window are below. Number one, Miami, Florida, 91,000, almost 92,000. That's over the course of 8 months. Fort Lauderdale, 60,500. That was one, you know, the half is obviously, you know, people cut in half or, you know, whatever. New York City, 15,000 almost, 14.8. Houston, Texas, 7,923. Orlando, Florida, 6,043. Los Angeles, 3,271. Like LA doesn't have enough problems there. Tampa, Florida, 3,237. Dallas, Texas, 2,256. San Francisco, maybe some of the migrants were wearing flowers in their hair, 2,052. And Atlanta, Georgia, 1,796. Newark, NJ, 1,498. Washington, D.C., 1,472. Chicago, Ill, 496. Las Vegas, Nevada, 483. And Austin, Texas, oh my, 171. He writes, I've attached the raw DHS data provided in the subpoena response showing all of the locations the migrants flew into during these 8 months in the chart below. DHS also revealed in the subpoena response that as of October 2023, there was a backlog of 1.6 million applicants waiting for DHS approval to fly to the United States via the parole program. And remember, everybody, the parole program is such that they just keep rolling over the parole. And it's also involved with the app that they gave people to fly into the United States and fly wherever they want. That one was revealed. And I have a lot of disagreements with the Center for Immigration Studies and Mark Krikorian. As you know, if you read my book, Liberty Can Live Free or Die, I have a whole article about tariffs and the dangers of tariffs and things like that. And I obviously have some criticism from Mark Krikorian, who thinks tariffs and blockages of free travel are positive for an economy. That's not the case. However, I do distinguish free trade and free travel. And of course, the fact that a political border is not a real border because it's put up by the politicians forcing people to pay for it. So we don't know whether anybody wants that border. The only real place you can have borders are on private property when you know people want them there. That's the way you do it. Otherwise, everybody's going to argue. Is that the place? Is it being policed enough? How much? Too much? What? Maybe we should have a police state. Make sure it's policed that way. Everybody will have a good time then. So obviously it's unworkable. And it's just dependent upon who thinks they can get their hands on the central authority here, which is a big mistake for constitutionalists. And it's a big mistake logically, because, of course, if you don't have your hands on that machine, well, guess what's going to happen? Exactly what's happening now. And so Mark Krikorian is incorrect in trying to centralize things and try to have the command and control Soviet style border patrol thing happening. I think it's a big risk for civil liberties. It's already a risk. It's already oppositional to civil liberties because it blocks free association. And that's a fact. You can't get around that. You know, it's taking people's money to create arbitrary political borders and police them with arbitrary political police actions. So I don't know how somebody can say, well, yeah, it's bad now, and I understand what you're saying, but if I can just get control of it, then that will make those immoral precepts somehow acceptable. It's not. They're not acceptable, and they're not workable, as you can see now. So if you think you're going to get a hero in there, or if you have friends who think that that's the case, please let them know that that's not the case, and it's predicated on a faulty assumption. And that assumption is that I can tell my neighbor I'm going to force him to pay for what I think is the right border spot. I'm going to make sure the private property there is not private property. I'm going to take it, and I'm going to put it in the vested authority of some central Soviet-style system that someday might not even be in my control. I'm going to make that assumption. A lot of bad ideas there. If you want to check this out, you can check it out. This comes from DeSantis's press secretary. Let me give you this as the final bit here in the flash. Biden's parole program is unlawful and constitutes an abuse of constitutional authority. Well, there they get it wrong. This is the press secretary for Ron DeSantis. There is no constitutional authority. They haven't declared war against a nation state. The borders aren't supposed to be under the protection of the United States government if they haven't done that. And the states have the prerogative, which, as I've mentioned, if you're new to the show, when Texas entered the Union in 1869, they finished their constitution. They had a Bureau of Immigration in it. It wasn't until 1875 with a bad Supreme Court ruling that they basically created out of thin air in Washington, D.C. and put it onto themselves. They usurped the state confederated power to be able to control that. And again, I'm an anarchist. I'm not strictly adhering to say, yes, you must accept the Constitution. You didn't sign it. I didn't sign it. So I can't force you to have to say, yes, I accept it. It has no authority over you. It has authority over the people who claim that it has authority over them. And that's the politicians like Ron DeSantis. So DeSantis is, and his press secretary, DeSantis has got it wrong. But we will note this within context. Florida is currently suing Biden to shut down this parole program. And we believe that we will prevail. And also, DHS, writes this Fox News reporter, wrote in the subpoena response that all individuals paroled into the United States are by definition inadmissible, including those paroled under the CHNV process. So they're admitting that they are putting all these people under the parole, that they're actually inadmissible. But since they claim the parole power, central authority, they're doing it. All right. Now, I've got another story for you that I want to hit just briefly in the news flash, and it's about firearms. This one, we want to focus on Tennessee and give a little more attention to something that happened thanks to the governor there. Now, the governor, a lot of people have ups and downs about the governor. And in fact, I'll show you a picture of the governor in just a minute. But first, we need a theme for this one as well. And no, you don't need Moby's version of this song. You just need Mission of Burma. That's all I'm saying, baby. That's when I reach for my revolver. Yes, thank you, Burma. Thank you. Yes, Mission of Burma. Like you guys. Thank you very much. You guys rock. Oh, man. Mission of Burma is awesome. Okay, so, ladies and gentlemen, let's turn to the story. I want to see, last I saw, it was not published at MRC TV, so I'm going to double check on this. And no, it has not been published. So you're getting a preview of this story that is out of Tennessee. But before, you know what? I'll start the story for you, and then I'll show you the really cool picture I have of the governor. So here it is. And I don't mean The Walking Dead. By the way, Steve, I saw your notation. I'll mention that to the audience as well over on X. And people can join Steve Swan over on X as well. And thank you to all the good people who are watching there, Rockfin, Rumble, and on YouTube. Okay, so here it is, everybody. Now, the story is a couple days after the fact, but here it is because there's something that I think a lot of people just don't seem to be discussing here. And it's, you know, it's not like you got some great enlightenment or whatever, but you know, I want to break apart these stories and derive some very important lessons here that a lot of people, they argue on one level. And I say, you know, if I were in a class, I'd try to introduce something else. Let's talk about this part. And I it usually leads to some pretty fruitful conversations with people. So let me offer this to you. Tennessee governor signs bill allowing some, not all, public school teachers to exercise gun right at work. All right, so if you're familiar with the show, you might be familiar with where I'm going to be going with this, okay? And to give you an idea, if you're familiar with the show, the letters are U and C, okay? So we'll get to that in just a minute, but let's hit back into this thing. I said it's a step that should not be necessary in the U.S., and it reveals important evidence that many bills depicted as defenses of rights are actually rhetorically stylish bulwarks of anti-rights paradigms because they reinforce what's already been going on. On April 26th, Tennessee Governor Bill Lee, and now I'll show you, I got a picture of Bill Lee right here. Here he is, Bill Lee, the spaceman, huh? I mean, that's when the governor of Tennessee was pitching for the Boston Red Sox and they called him the spaceman. And I even put it at the top of it, space expert, Bill Lee. Thank you, Bill Lee. There, I'll bring it up even closer. It's a little out of focus, but there you go. And I even got the governor's signature there. Isn't that cool? That's really cool. I don't even know what year this is from, but this is an original Bill Lee Boston Red Sox Topps baseball card. Yes, indeed. I held on to it because Bill Lee was such a character. He really was something. He was a wild man. And he has a book, too. I think it might be called Spaceman. And he's wearing like this Spaceman oxygen-like outfit. And he's on the pitcher's mound getting ready to pitch. It's pretty, he was a character, you know. So on April 26th, Tennessee Governor Bill Lee signed HB 1202 SB 1325, a bill allowing some but not all teachers working in government-run schools to exercise their inherent right to self-defense with firearms. Now, if alarm bells are going off for you there, I'm with you. I'm with you. It's not tinnitus. They are real alarm bells. At least they're mental alarm bells. I said, because the respect for this right, of course, comes with caveats. So it's not all teachers. The caveats mean that it doesn't respect or defend the right at all. Francis Floresca reports for the Daily Caller, noting that the bill, quote, would enable trained teachers and school staff to carry handguns in the classroom and around school, the bill noted. They would be required to complete 40 hours of training specific to school policing that has been approved by the Peace Officer Standards and Training, it said. Now, if you're in Tennessee, you're probably familiar with this proposal and what the governor did. He signed it, of course. Teachers and staff would also be required to submit their fingerprints as well as pass a background check and psychological evaluation, the bill also said. So you'd have to have the 40 hours of training and submit fingerprints and pass a background check. So I wrote, thus, superficially, this appears to be a positive move, but the devil's in the details. Rather than acknowledging the right to self-defense, the bill requires training that will be approved by the peace officer, in quotes. In other words, the so-called peace officer is not acting as a peace officer, but is instead acting as an enforcer of mandates. Mandates that, should the supposedly free individual not comply, will see said peace officer engage in government aggression to prohibit the possession of the arm or punish the teacher who does not want to bow to the so-called training mandate. That's an infringement of the right. That's why we're playing love removal machine. It's the machine of government always at war with you. Always, always. The requirement for fingerprints and to submit to a background check also are infringements of the right, and all infringements are explicitly prohibited by the Second Amendment. Now, some observers might declaim that it is counterproductive to call out these problems in the new bill. After all, the observers might say, people who try to work for public school systems already have to undergo vetting. And by definition, they're asking to work in the government-run education system, so they have a choice. Well, here we go, regular viewers. You know where we're going with UC. I said, but it is important to note that when any level of government requires people to give up a right in exchange for a government benefit, in this case, a job, this is what the Supreme Court and legal scholars call an unconstitutional condition. And by the way, NewsGuard, if you're watching, there's a hyperlink there so you can check it out. It goes right over to Cornell Law School. And generally, the Supreme Court and lower courts refute the claim that government has any power to require a person to give up a right in order to receive a government benefit. If it were the case, if that were the case, All right, sorry. If it were the case that the feds, states, or local governments could demand concessions of natural rights by people who receive so-called government gifts, these political institutions could claim that they give us myriad things that they describe as benefits, thus allowing them to crush our liberties at any time. The fact that said so-called benefits are defined for us by politicians and that they are forced on us while making us pay, well, those aren't part of the conversation because the charade of beneficent government must be maintained. Don't ask for freedom or the recognition that all government activity is done without regard to your consent. Love removal machine. Floresca notes that, hope I'm not hitting that too hard. Floresca notes that, quote, the bill drew attention from parents, teachers, and students, especially those connected to the Covenant School, which, of course, faced the state's deadliest school shooting in March 2023, where the perpetrator reportedly killed 3 children and 3 adults, according to News Channel 5 in Nashville. And practically, I wrote, firearms researchers and crime experts have noted that people with criminal intent often change their behavior to avoid targets that they suspect could be armed. The higher the probability of encountering an armed target, the more likely the assailant is to choose a different target. NewsGuard, again, by the way, those are called hyperlinks. There you go. But the positive practical outcome of peaceful people carrying firearms is not the deepest level of analysis here. It's about rights. And though some might applaud this Tennessee move to, under certain conditions, allow teachers to carry arms, all people have an inherent right to do so. And the new statute actually undercuts the right by creating requirements before teachers gain permission to carry. Obviously, the backers of the new statute injected those conditions and in order to assuage anti-gunners and others who might have justifiable fears about the idea that their kids might be near teachers who don't properly handle guns. The only answer is to look at the source of the problem, government-run schools, which throw all these parents and taxpayers together and pit their fears and interests against each other, even as the teachers themselves are told to conform to government infringements of their rights, the Second Amendment and the Fourth Amendment, in order to hold their tax-funded jobs. It's a messy problem, and the news from Tennessee shows us how unmanageable the government paradigm is, be it applied to schooling, content of schooling, or anything else run by a political system. There's a lot more coming with Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live.
Eleutheromania. The insatiable desire for freedom.
We have been enslaved for all our lives.
It's the new 3-song heavy metal EP from Captain Kickass.
The next ones they will.
Available now on your favorite music app or get it directly from CaptainKickass.com.
Free Talk Live.
Continuing with Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Remember, you can watch and listen every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on Rockfin, Rumble, my X/Twitter at Guard Goldsmith, and now on YouTube, as long as they allow us to stay there. Thanks very much. And remember, if you want textual information, check out my Substack, the Gardner Goldsmith Substack. But if you saw the show today, you saw that David Knight spoke with Alex Newman. And Alex Newman, formerly of The New American, great, great writing on a daily, weekly basis, but also wonderful books. And he now has started up the Liberty Sentinel. And I highly recommend that you can check it out anytime, libertysentinel.org. Let's see if we can drive some traffic there. Find him on Twitter, find on X, on Alex's channel or Liberty Sentinel's channel. You can follow them. And he's got a new book called Indoctrinating Our Children to Death. And Alex knows his history about the collectivization of education. and how screwed up that has made education, and how it was part of a large-scale plan going back to this guy named Robert Owen from Scotland and the Owenites. Now, if you watched the show about a year ago, I went through a lot of this information because I basically derived a multi-page document that I wrote myself based on Sam Blumenfeld's work, Dr. Sam Blumenfeld, who wrote things like NEA, Trojan Horse of American Education, Why Johnny Can't Read. Why Johnny Still Can't Read, and a bunch of other really good books. And the final books he did were co-written with Alex Newman, The Crimes of the Educators and things like that. Excellent, excellent work. And Sam was a friend of mine. And one of the things I wanted to mention was, if you looked at Alex's bookshelf when he was in the interview with David Knight, and they were talking about Charlotte Isherbeat and people like that, John Taylor Gatto, one of those other folks, you know, big prominent folks, exposing this long-term multi-generational Fabian socialist plan, all the way from Robert Owen, whose ideas were picked up by the Rockefellers, and they started teaching colleges here, and they did the look-say method of reading. And the Rockefellers actually had some of their kids taught by these teachers who didn't teach phonetics anymore. They taught so-called look-say reading, and their kids came out essentially illiterate. And it's in some of Sam's books. But what's, you know, a little bit of a nice thing to see is, you know, you're in the right place when you can look at a good guy and a friend who lets me co-host, fill-in host on his show, along with Tony Arterburn, you know, David Knight, such a great and stalwart principled person. When he's talking with another principled person, Alex Newman, about his new book, Indoctrinating Our Children to Death, carrying on this great work of Charlotte Isherbeat and Sam Blumenfeld. And on the shelf behind him is one of Sam's books, NEA, Trojan Horse of American Education, which my father edited under a pseudonym because he was working with Charlotte in Washington. And I've told the story before, literally Carter holdovers at the education department. And it was only about a year and a half to 2 years old at that time. They were breaking into my father's office and they were stealing pamphlets, files that were supposed to be with a code. They were supposed to go to Reagan only. So my father and Charlotte and Sam Blumenfeld and others, and I didn't know this, but evidently Ron Paul was in some of these meetings as well, according to Rand. My father and Ron were friends. I didn't know that. I'd love to talk to Ron Paul about that. But they would meet in restaurants because they were worried that their offices were bugged. And they were there to try to dismantle the education department. And, of course, we've seen what's happened. The central planning of education, it's been an absolute mess, and it's allowed the special interests to grow and grow and grow. And of course, lowest common denominatorize the education system. So I wanted to, again, just to show, if you get the opportunity to go to Liberty Sentinel, I left the tab open because I knew I was going to talk about this subject, and I wanted to make sure that I brought it up for you. So it was really, really great to see. And you can see there's the new book right there. I like it. He's got some great quotes on there. Of all things, Mike Flynn has a quote on it, but James Lindsay has another one. This book fills a critical gap in understanding how America's educational system was subverted and destroyed and what to do about it. And if you want to look up Robert Owen stuff, he came from Scotland. He was a big illuminist type dude, very much into the Hegelian dialectic. And he was a dude who screwed up a lot of people. And his ideas were picked up by Horace Mann, as you heard Alex discuss, and they ran from there, you know, more collectivization. All right, so now let's get into a couple of the other topics that I want to discuss. Now, on our preview during the news flash, you got to see the story that I want to discuss now. Let's turn to those people in central authority and start getting into our larger stories tonight. We're going to be introducing it with what I think is a pretty darn repulsive statement from this Saturday Night Live comedian, Colin Jost, at the White House Shills Correspondent Dinner. And he was hosting it, offered a couple nice jokes, but, you know, typically the Correspondent Dinner is a roast of the president. and it's supposed to be gloves off. And they didn't tell jokes. He didn't tell jokes about the president. They told jokes about Donald Trump. And he actually, this guy Colin Jost, claimed, I'm paraphrasing, that it was great to be there with such a good and fair man or something like that, a good principled man. Okay. I'm sure he would enjoy giving that speech in one of the broken down, destroyed, pulverized places in Gaza, or perhaps on the way over to some of the places in the Donbass. I'm sure that maybe he'd like to give that speech on stage next to Joe Biden or next to John McCain when Joe Biden was shaking hands inside a building with Ole Tjaniebach, the neo-Nazi of the Sloboda Party. Well, Colin Jost doesn't seem to understand just how corrupt this United States political government press system of prostitution is. But let's hear what he had to say again.
This is the exception. This freedom is incredibly rare, and the journalists in this room help protect that freedom, and we cannot ever take that for granted.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to remind you, you can see here, that woman in the front in the cutaway, that is Interior Department head Deb Haaland. If you're not familiar with her, I sure am, because I've written numerous articles about this woman. She's an American Indian who is working to push wind farm power lines through Indian burial land in the Southwest, of course, all for their great green agenda, which evidently takes precedence over the property of people from Indian tribes. She has numerous times been called an utter sellout to the people who, yes, still have relatives who might have been put into the Indian boarding schools. And if you want to see a great documentary, watch Peter Coyote's excellent documentary about the Indian boarding schools on the northern U.S. border and southern Canadian border. Because they would take those kids, supposedly Christianize them, force them to no longer speak their language, and then they said, we can no longer pray to our gods. We don't even speak our own native tongue anymore. It's a really, really sad story. But Deb Haaland, the American Indian, continues that tradition. Let me just show you once more, if you want to see the picture of her. I'll try to freeze frame it for you. There, well, it's too short. But there you go. She is one heck of a piece of work, that woman. That is something else. And talking about pieces of work, well, let's talk about how some people have had enough. And they, unfortunately, can't give the power back to the Indians because they're on other continents. But they want to be free of U.S. influence. Let's go to our first major story as United States troops finally left Niger over the past 24 hours. And of course, over the past 48 to 72 hours, we've heard about Chad, the nation state of Chad, saying get out as well. This leaves United States bases for drone murder now no longer in use. That's a good thing. It also conforms to the U.S. Constitution for people who want to say, well, there's a U.S. security issue at risk. We've got to have those bases. Really? I don't see that in the U.S. Constitution. Let's check this out right now. This comes from the good people at RT, and they had a number of excellent pieces today. Let's check it out. Here we go.
Meanwhile, thousands of locals have rallied in Niger, demanding that all foreign troops leave the West African country and their bases be closed. Earlier, citizens celebrated as American soldiers began to pack up and ship out. Nigerians have also been voicing strong support for their military government, which recently made the decision to scrap a security pact with Washington. Officials cited a lack of sovereignty as the main reason for the eviction order. It's the latest setback for the U.S. in the Sahel region, where Western influence has been waning recently. Now, a rising wave of pro-Palestinian protests is sweeping across the United States. One particular flashpoint is New York's Columbia University, where people broke into and occupied an academic building. The move came after the college's management began suspending students for refusing to disperse. The same building, by the way, Hamilton Hall, had notably been taken over by anti-Vietnam War protesters back in the 1960s. Dramatic footage from the scene of the ongoing standoff is circulating on socials.
All right, everybody. So I'm going to stop it right there. And obviously, a lot of people are saying, you know, this sort of thing goes too far. They mentioned at RT there have been 900 arrests all around. Now, some of those arrests very, very clearly would, I think, to most people who are involved with the idea that the state should be enforcing certain types of statutes to protect people and so on and property, some people might think that those are appropriate. However, it becomes very complicated here, again, from an anarchist standpoint, as far as what is morally justified and not morally justified. And of course, nothing the state does is morally justified, because the state can only exist through the immorality of forcing you to pay for it. However, if we take it to the level of the people who generally accept the notion that the state can take my neighbor's money to pay for some so-called basic form of property protection, even though, of course, it reinforces the tautology because it doesn't protect that person's property, the state has a claim to it. But they overlook that and they say, well, you know, they're destroying property. Again, we get into the problem of the tragedy of the commons, because Columbia receives oodles of tax money. So what does one do? If it's strictly private property and people are literally breaking windows on that private property, then I think clearly it's a lot more understandable to see people hiring a police force, a private force, to say, protect this. And now I have a claim against you because you've damaged my property, right? But how can the people at Columbia say that they have a claim against people who were forced, possibly, and I know they're most, you know, many, many younger people, but don't forget Jill Stein was arrested on Sunday, right? How can they make a claim to say, let's say hypothetically, a person who's 72 years old, like her, not her, has been paying taxes all this time? That person could hypothetically say, every penny that I gave actually went to Columbia, because it's fungible, right? Who knows where the money went? Right. And of course, it's debt serviced. So all those kids who were protesting, they were already born into government debt. They were born debt slaves. That's not good either. Right. Now, I know many of these people might have left wing collectivist ideas and things like that. And maybe they won't learn the lesson about the tragedy of the commons. Right. They're focused on calling for the government right now that is taxing you and me and others to give weapons to Israel to slaughter more innocent people in Gaza, in an area that they have controlled for decades, and they have made smaller and smaller and smaller, controlling the water, controlling the economic opportunities, and so many other things, kidnapping people who are innocent and holding them without trial inside Israel. So many types of things that, of course, if the Israelis are justified to go in to rescue the kidnapped victims from Hamas on October 7th, and they can do all this damage to innocent people and innocent kidnapping victims who are supposedly there to be rescued. They're supposed to be rescued. Literally, they shot a number of them with their hands up as they were trying to get free. If the Israelis can use that argument, then Hamas and the Palestinians under the Hamas so-called political authority, which was supported by Netanyahu and the United States government, then obviously the Palestinians have the same argument they can make against the Israelis. Literally holding 13, 14-year-old kids without trial, hundreds a year for months and months and months and months. Now, if that's not called kidnapping, I don't know what is. So, but in a way, we are all, as I mentioned with the cult, we are all victims of the love removal machine. It's the machinery of war. And by the way, I saw the message from my brother Inside X. Thank you, Peter. He says, keep that card. I will. I will. Thank you, Peter. Very much appreciated. And Steve Swan had this comment in before, and this goes towards where we're going to be going about the United States dollar. Peter Schiff was on Alex Jones yesterday. He is adamant that a major depression will be forthcoming. Yeah, absolutely. Of course, they might not call it a depression. The so-called Great Recession that started in 2008 and kicked off a lot of nation states like Russia, like China, dropping long-term U.S. debt instruments that are collateralized in dollars, right? They said, we're gonna get paid back with worthless dollars because they pumped $1.2 trillion in under the American Recovery Act under Obama. So that's a lot more money bidding after a certain amount of goods that are only on a certain level of productivity scale. So it's a much steeper incline for the new amount of money that's going in, which means, of course, you're going to be bidding up the prices of everything. It was just simple Austrian economics. So I thought it was interesting to see how the United States government, starting then, started to depict Russia as the bad guy, started to bang the drums for overthrow of Assad. And I learned, as I mentioned in Los Angeles, speaking to a guy from the Middle East when I was having dinner with Glenn Jacobs out there, he said, yeah, they're going to try to overthrow Assad. They want to, and I learned more, block Russian energy exports, the pipeline that the Russians were making with the Syrians going through Syria. And they expanded that to the overthrow of Ukraine to try to block Russia going down into Crimea. And then, of course, the Nazi battalions got in there, killed a lot of ethnically Russian people between 2014 and 2022 when Putin said, OK, enough. So a lot of these things have served multiple purposes for the hegemonic empire builders of the United States military industrial complex and for different political people to try to get in there and use the Russian meddling rhetoric to say, oh, well, you know, Donald Trump, he must be involved with this Russian meddling, which really wasn't Russian meddling, you know, all these types of things. So now I want to show you how in that Middle Eastern situation with Gaza and Israel and so on, how the United States is again pulling a fast one. This has to do with, remember, the International Criminal Court might be taking, putting Netanyahu up on charges for arrest. The International Court of Justice already says there is a plausible argument to be made that already was presented to see if the International Court of Justice would actually openly state that there was genocide going on. The South African government presented this argument a number of months ago, and it was confirmed by people voting at the ICJ. Yes, there is a plausible argument after we've heard this. Now the next step comes, and that'll take a while. Who knows what the ICJ is going to do? But they clearly presented a solid argument. The United States didn't like that. Great Britain didn't like that. And their defense contractor friends certainly didn't like that. And neither did the Israeli lobby that, of course, suddenly out of nowhere seems to have helped the Speaker of the House make $2 million over a very short period of time. So let's see how, remember, yesterday I mentioned that it was revealed that the United States government, although last week they had said that they were going, even before this, they were going to cite the one particular unit of the Israeli Defense Force for genocide. They were going to continue sending weapons to them. And Anthony Blinken came out and said, no, we're not going to do anything about that. We're going to still allow them to get weapons. Like you wouldn't have been able to stop them anyway. Right. Again, fungibility. Right. Well, now they're pulling something even more. Since the Secretary of State and others in the U.S. regime got some pushback about that to say, wait a minute, you've got the ICJ arguments that have been shown pretty strong by the South Africans. We can see what's going on. Israeli soldiers literally are shooting their own videos of themselves committing genocide. You've got statements from people within the IDF before October 8th, and you've got statements from Netanyahu saying that their intention is to sweep all the people in that Palestinian Gaza region away. And as the Likud party stated many years ago, before the Palestinians rephrased it to make it ironic, they are going to make Israel dominant from the Jordan River to the sea. Those statements, along with what I mentioned, Susan Powell's statements from USAID about how, yes, there is starvation going on, show intent and then the output from the Israeli forces to starve people. That's a portion of the genocide approach. This is what they're doing. So let's look at now how they're definitely changing things. And this is, it's amazing to see this, okay? It's sort of like, let's say somebody broke your favorite vase, right? And you said, hey, you broke my favorite vase. And then they point over at a different vase, and this vase is tiny, and it was made, you know, in some cheap way, right? Would you think that that was the same vase? And then they say, oh, no, it's right there. There's a vase right there. No, you wouldn't. Well, watch what they're doing. They're definitely trying to put forward the idea again that they're upset about Jewish statist Zionist attacks inside Gaza, as if they're upset about what's going on now. But when you actually dig into this, and Antiwar's got a piece on this as well, when you actually dig into this story, you'll see that it's not about post-October 7th actions. It's all done for show. Check this out. This is amazing. Watch this. This is, again, RT doing a good job. U.S. pulls another deflection regarding Israeli war crimes and genocide.
In the U.S., the State Department says it has identified five units of the Israeli security forces responsible for gross violations of human rights. Just how recent are those cases, though, and is it likely to affect Washington's arming of Israel?
Well, it's interesting. These cases, and this is pretty much the first time I think the U.S. has ever admitted that there have been these gross violations of human rights carried out by Israeli units, and five units, and not just one, actually predate the current conflict in Gaza. So they're way before October the 7th. What has Washington got to say about this? Will it stop arming Israel as a result of its own new investigation? No.
After a careful process, we found five Israeli units responsible for individual incidents of gross violations of human rights. All of these were incidents much before October 7th, and none took place in Gaza.
Is that Israel is a unique country being offered unique treatment?
There is not a special treatment. There is not a different standard.
What does slightly differently mean?
So Israel is a country that in which we have a longstanding security relationship. There is a lot of bulk assistance that is going.
You might be wondering what those gross violations were. Well, they include torture, rape, and extrajudicial killing. So some pretty serious issues there. However, we heard from the White House and the State Department that Israel has dealt with the offenders, so it's all okay.
Fears are mounting in Israel as well. We need to...
I love her sarcasm. We'll be back with more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Check us out Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Rockfin, Rumble, YouTube, and my ex at Gard Goldsmith. And remember to check out my Substack, the Gardner Goldsmith Substack, for more Liberty-oriented news.
On Free Talk Live, we're bringing people to the ideas of liberty every day. From wrestling superstars like Glenn Jacobs.
You guys really are having an impact, I believe. Like I said, a lot of where I am now is due to listening to Free Talk Live. You changed my mind on some very important issues years ago.
To random people tuning in on the radio.
I was kind of stuck in the left-right paradigm. I heard your show by chance on a Saturday night. From there, I went on, joined the Free State Project and become an amplifier. So, I mean, that's really the reason why I amp is because I know that if it wasn't for you guys being on as many stations as you are, I never would have found the ideas of liberty.
You can help more people hear the message of liberty by joining Free Talk Live's AMPS program on Patreon for as little as $5 a month. And you'll get access to special perks. Visit amps.freetalklive.com, amps.freetalklive.com.
Free Talk Live.
Continuing with Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Remember, you can watch and listen every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on Rockfin, Rumble, my X/Twitter at Guard Goldsmith, and now on YouTube, as long as they allow us to stay there. Thanks very much, and remember, if you want textual information, check out my Substack, the Gardner Goldsmith Substack. I love her sarcasm, so it's all okay.
This, that the International Criminal Court could soon issue arrest warrants for top officials, including Benjamin Netanyahu. But that case actually has nothing to do with the ongoing war either, right?
Right. This could come from the ICC as soon as the end of this week. And it's interesting because Netanyahu has said this is absolutely crazy. You cannot absolutely in any sense or form come back and label me with this. And Netanyahu feels that he should be protected. Apparently, he's even gone to Joe Biden at the White House to see what he could do to stop that. And let's be clear where we are right now in terms of human rights and potential war crimes. More than 34,000 individuals killed in Gaza since October of last year. More than 13,000 of those even are children alone. We've got the allegations that Israel could be carrying out a genocide in Gaza. They're coming from potential top courts and actors from around the world. And we've even now got lawyers in the US, I believe more than 90 of them, who have signed a letter that's due to be sent to the Biden administration. And this includes Secretary of State lawyers who are saying that by the US continuing to arm Israel, it's actually in violation of its own laws. And yet, despite all of this mounting evidence, we're hearing from the White House that they will support Netanyahu until the bitter end.
Charlotte Dubinsky.
Wow, that is just something else. Just incredible. And I've got more. There's a really good piece from Judge Andrew Napolitano looking at the U.S. government. And I tell you, it's just amazing to see the spokespeople there constantly saying that it is, but it's not. Oh, yeah, this is not different, but it's actually different. We are going to treat them differently. You know, it's just anybody. It's ridiculous. In fact, let me do this for you. I want to play this one for you while I have the opportunity. I'll play you the Benjamin Netanyahu piece. And I got this one. Yeah, let me put this out here for you and just play it separately, because I think you'll find this pretty darn interesting. It's going to pop up on its own.
Attempting to be patient, but losing his patience. He had the patience of a saint.
All right, so I've just got to do one thing here real quick. Okay, here we go. So this is a reporter who has the patience of a saint. Watch this. This is great. And unfortunately, he's had a bit of enough trying to speak to one of the White House spokespeople.
Attempting to be patient, but losing his patience. He had the patience of a saint, and then, you know, enough is enough with the spokesperson for the State Department. Watch this.
But I'm asking you, there's a foreign leader who's saying that American law enforcement, including the National Guard, ought to crack down on Americans exercising their First Amendment right to free speech. I'm asking you on this particular issue, not on October 7th, not on all this that happened. I'm asking you, do you find this to be appalling by a foreign leader in direct interference in the way Americans conduct themselves?
A leader can call on whatever they'd like, Saeed, but it's no one is naive to the fact that utilization of the National Guard is ultimately a decision up to individual governors.
I understand.
And so beyond that, the Prime Minister is welcome to make whatever comments he'd like.
Yes, hold it. Please, I understand the need to combat the despicable anti-Semitism and so on. I understand what the president is doing. I'm asking you, do you reject the fact that a foreign leader is saying that the demonstrations ought to be put out, ought to be cracked down upon? That's what I'm asking you. Do you reject that?
Sorry.
I mean, you reject the U.S. government cracking down on peaceful demonstrators, correct?
Right. How about that?
You reject that? I mean, this is part of what America is all about. I'm asking you, do you reject the interference of a foreign leader calling for the crackdown on full American citizens exercising their basic rights, their First Amendment rights, to demonstrate? That's what I'm asking you.
The prime minister was commenting on something happening in this country. I will say,
I'm asking you. You are here representing the government of the United States of America. I'm asking you, as an officer of this government, of this administration, do you reject the interference of a foreign leader saying that you must crack down on Americans exercising their right to demonstrate? It's a very simple question.
I wouldn't equate that to interfering, Saeed. I've taken a couple of questions on this.
I have a couple more questions, but I have one last comment. Don't you feel offended by the fact that a foreign leader is trying to fan the flames against Palestinian Americans in this country? That's exactly what he's doing. You don't feel offended by that?
Saeed, that is not how I would interpret the Prime Minister's comments, and I defer you to his office to offer any clarification on what he said.
State Department just doesn't care, or this young man is incompetent or fearful. I'm not even sure how to get a handle on this, Anya, except it's a disgrace for a government that supposedly exists to preserve human liberty.
You mentioned, or the way you described Saeed's questioning there, I think is right, that he had the patience of a saint. And not only in that video clip, but Saeed has been working at the State Department at least for the last 10 years I've been here in D.C., questioning them on the regular, but especially over these last several months since this war began, I've watched as he sits through these briefings with Matthew Miller and Vedant Patel lying just blatantly.
Now, I just want to pause here, everybody. If you're only listening in, and not only, but if you're listening in audio at freeworld.fm, Judge Napolitano late yesterday afternoon, spoke with Anya Parampil. It's Parampil. Parampil is her last name. You can follow her on Twitter/X as well. And the individual who was in that council meeting that they're talking about there. He is, as she mentioned, a longtime reporter, and his name is Saeed. The White House spokesperson is Vedant Patel, principal deputy spokesperson for the State Department. But his name is Saeed, S-A-I-D, of course, Arikat, A-R-I-K-A-T, and he works for Al-Quds. So just wanted to give you that heads up there. So we'll go back and continue with Anya Parampil and Judge Napolitano. All right.
As he sits through these briefings with Matthew Miller and Vedant Patel lying, just blatantly lying. And not only that, but defending, for example, Israeli attacks and the destruction of Al-Shifa Hospital and egregious crimes that we've, again, all see played on video. And we can see it on their faces. Vedant and Miller, that they know they're lying. And I always wonder how it would be if a reporter in there kind of broke the third wall and asked something just like, how do you sleep at night? That's the question I would like to ask these government spokespeople. And the way that Saeed questioned Vedant there, really, I felt like he was speaking for me. As a U.S. government official, are you not offended at Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's behavior? Because I was, and Vedant Patel couldn't even say that yes, this is constitutionally protected speech. I'm quite sure even the U.S. government spokespeople have to take the same oath to uphold and protect the U.S. Constitution. I mean, isn't that the basis of serving in our government?
Yes.
People should resign if they cannot speak in defense of the basic principles of our Constitution, and we as the American people should demand that, just as we should demand an investigation into all of the members of Congress receiving AIPAC, such as Speaker Mike Johnson. I mean, it's just, we've really reached a breaking point, I think, when it comes to our government and this influence, because I think American people are seeing through it unlike ever before. And so the performance and the TV show is getting a little old, Vedant Patel. Everybody can see through it.
Right.
Yeah, and I really appreciated their conversation. It was excellent, and you can go to the Judging Freedom Show on YouTube And so far, I think he's been hit once in a while, but so far he hasn't been really slammed by YouTube. So that's very good. And it brings back the thoughts again of those people breaking into the windows at Columbia and so on. And again, you know, the problem is that so many of those folks must get so frustrated seeing guys like Patel and Miller and Biden and Blinken and all the other politicians like Johnson and so many others who have so much blood on their hands just lie through their teeth in this giant charade, as they would say, as if, you know, the guys asking questions, we know you're lying, you know, and you can't even say that people have a right to free speech. And one of the only verifiably correct things constitutionally that Patel said was that the control of the National Guard is up to the governors, which, by the way, is something that people like Tom Cotton and people like the Speaker of the House don't seem to grasp, because they both have called for the National Guard to be called in, not by the governors, but by the president, which is not how it works. There's not even constitutionally, there's not supposed to be any standing army. There's not supposed to be a thing called the U.S. Army or the National Guard. There can be a U.S. Navy. That's in the Constitution. But the standing army is not supposed to exist. The militia exists. And the militia is, as they said at the time of the revolution, the bulk of the people. That's all people who can carry firearms, all of us. And so even under that paradigm, they're screwed up, because the governors don't control something called the National Guard under any constitutional authority to do so. And then they add to it the idea that the president can then call up the National Guard. The militias are supposed to be under the control, and not under the control, but under the call up of the states if they need them. And then if the states need help and they claim that there is, the legislature or the governor says that there is some danger to their constitutionally Republican form of government, they can ask for assistance from the federal government. And I'll remind you again, Whiskey Rebellion, when George Washington marched with a military force that bigger than the Army of the Potomac into Western Pennsylvania to collect those whiskey taxes that were applied by an excise tax. There's nothing in the Constitution that says how the tax is going to be collected. Alexander Hamilton convinced Washington to go under the auspices of a judge who was a friend of Hamilton's, who said that there is an insurrection or a rebellion going on in Pennsylvania. It didn't come from Pennsylvania. It wasn't that judge's place to say that. The people who were engaged in the wrongdoing there were the judge and Washington and Hamilton. So, for example, if you look at science fiction author L. Neil Smith's series of books that starts with The Probability Brooch, and the main character on that, by the way, is a guy named Vaughn, and his last name is Mises. There's an alternate dimension that is much freer, much more anarcho-capitalist, voluntarist. And the hero there is the guy who shot George Washington, the historical hero. Because they were right. They were right. You have no constitutional place to be here. So if we go into Speaker Johnson, he's off base. Tom Cotton is off base. Anybody who says the president should be ordering the National Guard to go in there, even talk show callers, just let them know, you know, you're not right. Let me sort of show you. Now, you know, it's tough sometimes, because people get, they feel affronted, they feel offended, you know, when you're trying to give them information, because they feel like, oh, you know so much or whatever. Well, you do. You got information they don't have. And it is valid information. It's inarguable information. It's right there in the Constitution. You just be like, okay, show me the place where it says the president can control the National Guard unless there's a declaration of war, right? There isn't one. He gets to control after a declaration of war. If there's no declaration of war, it's hands off. Or if he's going to go into a state, by the invitation of the states, then they can call up the National Guard to go into that state. And the states, the governors, can ask other National Guard troops, not National Guard, militia troops, to come over from other states, which is what Abbott and DeSantis agreed to a couple years ago on the immigration thing. So they're at least closer to that historical precedence, you know? Anyway, let me turn to the chat. I get to see my brother gave me the thumbs up. And just thank you again, everybody. I got to have a and by the way, I don't know if you're watching right now. I'm not even going to look in the room yet. But Jason Barker, thank you so much for being there on the phone today, man. Jason has a great idea for some shows coming up. And I got to text him back yesterday. Sundays and Mondays, I pretty much can't be in contact with people because I'm so busy. And then today I started getting another one of those headaches. And, you know, I've been having the problems with the exhaustion and stuff like that. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff, you know, you've seen doctors, you're trying to work through it and everything. And you get suggestions from people. And it's always a wonderful, heartening thing. And like I said, you know, I wouldn't trade it. Because like Russell Brand, you get to a place where you realize God exists, you know, and you start looking into the Bible, you realize, oh, this is verified stuff. And, so anyway, I won't go into that, but I had a great conversation with Jason, and Jason will probably know, you know, he'll probably acknowledge when I called him up to try to tell him I love this idea and stuff like that. I could barely talk. It was just really, it was a bad one today. And, you know, that's in addition to the sort of general weird exhaustion that I've been having, which seems to be some sort of chronic fatigue stuff because I was exposed to mold and then I got a viral thing and, you know, it kicks off chronic fatigue for some people like Epstein-Barr syndrome. So we'll see, you know, but Jason, thanks, man. I don't know if you're watching. I'll check in on the chats. And I really appreciate it, dude. You're just such a good guy. And folks, you can watch. Go to Knights of the Storm, the Knights of the Storm. Go to Knights of the Storm. Check out their schedule. And you can see it if you just head over to theknightsofthestorm.com and you click on the Friends tab. He's got all the schedule. He's doing all this great stuff. And he's helping out freeworld.fm. So if you hear us on freeworld.fm, please give a tip of the hat and check out Jason's stuff, the Foxhole. Check out Knights of the Storm Saturdays at 10 a.m. I'm telling you, you can't go wrong. He's a real solid, solid guy, as are all the people involved with Knights of the Storm. Let's talk about U.S. warfare and some other stories that I have not covered, thanks to the good people at antiwar.com. And don't forget, folks, they're doing their fundraiser at antiwar.com. So if you get the opportunity and you think, you know, some of the stuff that I'm reading here is valuable, please get on over there. Every dollar will be matched. Support antiwar.com today. I've tweeted about this, you know, a few times. And you can see here all the blue stories are ones I've already read and clicked on just today. You know, like boom, 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 right? And, you know, literally, it's like you got this headache, you're going to fall over. I'm taking bits of caffeine pill and stuff. And I'm like, I got to read this, got to read this, you know? It's crazy. But, you know, you're fighting for freedom, doing stuff that my dad thought was so important that I, you know, I find, you know, such kinship with all of you. So let's go to, excuse me. We'll just repeat quickly to recap from yesterday, to remind people yesterday, bipartisan bill would create anti-Semitism monitors at college campuses. And don't forget, just like the statute in Florida, if you criticize the state of Israel, that will be considered anti-Semitism. Okay. Now, one of the things I want to mention when we talk about these colleges, and I have to look into this a little bit more, but I bet in the audience, you're probably aware of this. I believe on a federal level, they passed a statute that prohibits any business that is dealing with the federal government on any government contract, receiving government funds. They cannot engage in criticism of the state of Israel's policies, or they will lose their contract. Now, I don't think these two are going to cross, but interestingly enough, I think sentimentally, there is something to be considered here. And that is, universities like Columbia, Harvard, Yale, even, you know, they're supposedly private, they still get massive amounts of money, right? Grants, federal grants, all these things, right? And as I mentioned, people breaking that property and so on, breaking the windows, well, what are you going to do when everybody thinks it's their property? If somebody wants to say, I think that window looks a lot better broken, well, their taxes went to put the window up. Why can't they go and bring the window down, right? It becomes this absurd argument because the state is unmanageable, because it puts all these people with different ideas about how their money should be spent together. And Columbia is one of the examples. Even though it's a private college and they charge a ton of money, they get a ton of money from the feds. My question is do they have any contracts, not just grants, but contracts from the federal government? Okay, because these students want divestiture. just like the old time back in the 1980s for divestiture from apartheid South Africa. You know, I ain't going to play Sun City, right? So little Steven running around with Peter Garrett of Midnight Oil, you know, all these different people from different bands and stuff, not going to play Sun City. Bono walking down the street, you know, Lou Reed walking along. So what happens if the interests of these people whose tax money is being used to fund Colombia, if that runs up against, if Colombia is getting any contracts for, say, research or anything like that, and that's a big possibility. They could be working simultaneously with the NIH, USAID, whatever it might be, right? If they've got contracts with the federal government, that means that this federal statute then prohibits them from criticizing policies of the state of Israel, and it will be depicted as anti-Semitic, thanks to people like Chuck Schumer and the rhinos. So this is a much bigger thing than I even considered when these people were talking about divestiture. I was thinking, yeah, their tax money goes, but then I remembered that statute. It's only a couple years old, and it was driven by Schumer. So I'm very curious to find out, because obviously these universities are going to have a ton of pressure from many of their big time pro-Zionist investors to say don't divest. But they might also have pressure from the federal government to say, if you divest and you give a reason for the divestiture that is in any way critical of Israel, and they could even depict the divestiture as being critical without words. I mean, we know that they might do that. Clearly, why not? It's another rhetorical weapon. They don't care about the meaning of words. They'll just say that, right? As Missing Persons says, what are words for when nobody listens anymore? I wanted to present that and get your thoughts on that to see if you think that that's a good, you know, if that's a logical syllogism. And it might not be an exact syllogism, but I think it's there's some validity to at least wonder about it. Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Tired of the ever-inflating U.S. dollar? You can live your life on Dash with BitRefill.com, where you can buy gift cards from big retailers, including grocers, gas stations, phone refills, Amazon, and even prepaid MasterCards. Thanks to Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month for this sponsorship. It's easy to get and use Dash. You can learn more at Dash.org. That's Dash.org.
This hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. In addition to being one of the world's first cryptocurrencies, Dash was the first crypto project to have a decentralized autonomous organization that to this day continues to improve and promote Dash. Every month, 10% of the mining rewards go into a treasury. Anyone with one Dash to spend can put forward a proposal to the Dash Masternodes. The Masternodes vet the proposals and decide which ones move forward and are funded by that treasury. Nowadays, DAOs are plentiful, but Dash paved the way by doing it first, nearly a decade ago. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol, and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org.
Free Talk Live. We're back with Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Thanks for tuning in, and remember, find us every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Rockfin, Rumble, YouTube, and my ex at Gard Goldsmith. So I just wanted to bring that up again. Bipartisan bill would create anti-Semitism monitors in college campuses, obviously contrary to the First Amendment. It's very clear, and, you know, I mean, it's ridiculous. But anti-war also has a couple other big ones, okay? So this one goes back to that rights violations piece that we saw in the RT video. Dave DeCamp put this out yesterday. The State Department said Monday that it determined 5 units of Israel's security forces were responsible for gross human rights violations. And I hope you don't mind me repeating this, because there are a couple points I wanted to bring up in the text version of this from Dave at Antiwar. Against Palestinians in the West Bank, but the finding won't impact U.S. military aid to Israel. Yeah. After a careful process, we found, and that is completely contrary to U.S. policy. And of course, even giving anything, regardless of where they stand, is contrary to the U.S. Constitution. After a careful process, the State Department spokesman Vidin Patel said, after a careful process, we found 5 Israeli units responsible for individual incidents of gross violations of human rights. All of these were incidents before October 7th. None took place in Gaza. 4 of these units, he said, have effectively remediated these violations. Really? How do you remediate rape and torture? I don't know, which is what we expect partners to do. For a remaining unit, we continue to be in consultations and engagements with the government of Israel. That remaining unit is believed to be Netzah Yehuda, an ultra-Orthodox military battalion responsible for the death of 78-year-old Palestinian American, of a 78-year-old Palestinian American in 2022. That was the one that we mentioned was the one that was cited earlier. Media reports said that the U.S. was expected to blacklist Netzah Yehuda last week, but you got it. After protest from Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, you got it. Yes, Anthony Blinken, who is a citizen of Israel, and other officials decided not to offer the sanctions, to apply the sanctions. Secretary of State Blinken told House Speaker Mike Johnson in a letter last week that the U.S. wouldn't be sanctioning any Israeli military units despite the gross human rights violations. And what? Yeah, they're sending them more money. And don't forget, last night we spelled out the hypocrisy of people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez showing up with the Palestinian protesters at Columbia, showing solidarity with them, when just a few weeks ago she voted in favor of the omnibus budget that has $3.8 billion, its annual amount, in it to send more weapons to Israel. She voted against the most recent $16 billion package from last week, but she voted for the one last month. I mean, you know, hypocrisy, thy face is AOC. Right. And then, as I mentioned last night, there's Senator Ed Markey. Ed Markey in January put out a public statement about all the gross violations of human rights. And what did he do? Not only did he vote for the budget, the omnibus budget with the $3.8 billion in it, but last week he voted for that $95 billion package for Ukraine, Taiwan, which, of course, can go back over to Ukraine and Israel. I mean, they just spit in your face and call it rain. It's just incredible. I'm hearing my dad's voice right now. Yeah, amazing. Just incredible. And one more from Antiwar. There's so many. Want to keep things moving along pretty quickly, but I hope you're finding this information good. Again, if you want the links to these things, of course, you can go to antiwar.com. I've got the hyperlinks for most of these stories inside my X feed. And if you're watching the show after the fact and you want to get this information out to people on Rumble and on YouTube, you can pause the video and send it to someone. You can link it to someone at that time code. Okay. So if you think it's okay and you think they can handle my, you know, cadaverous looking visage here, hopefully we're turning those political frowns upside down near the electric fire, then send it over to them. That'll be great. I've got something else I want to mention to you about free speech coming up in just a minute. Then we've got this one. Israel undoubtedly committing genocide, says Holocaust scholar Amos Goldberg. This comes from Middle East Eye. Israeli researcher from Hebrew University argues that what is happening in Gaza does not need to resemble the Holocaust to qualify as a genocide. Yes. Won't go into the details on that one. You can find that at antiwar.com. And there's this one from Anthony Blinken. This comes from Kyle Anzalone of the Libertarian Institute, another great institute. Sheldon Richman, Scott Horton, James Bovard, Ted Carpenter. Excellent, excellent people. So many other people. Lori Calhoun. Kyle wrote this yesterday. As you can see the headline, if you're only listening in audio here, Blinken says U.S. nearing Saudi-Israel proposal, but calm in Gaza is needed. Really? So that would be the Saudi Arabian government that was put in there by the dying British colonial system, and the State of Israel that was put in there as pretty much the last thing before the British government pulled out of India as its empire waned. Well, Blinken said the White House is finalizing an incentive package to bribe Israel, I love this, and Saudi Arabia to normalize their ties. The Biden administration is seeking to expand the Trump-era Abraham Accords, in which Washington handed out favors to four Muslim nations to develop official ties with Tel Aviv. Now, Kyle's got the handle of this. During a World Economic Forum gathering in Saudi Arabia, Blinken said that the White House was nearly ready to unveil its proposal. Money, 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 money. The work that, like, Saudi Arabia and Israel needed. The work that Saudi Arabia, the United States, and the United States have been doing together in terms of our agreements, I think, he says, is potentially very close to completion. Similar to his predecessor, Biden is seeking foreign policy success during an election year by bribing an Arab nation to develop official ties with Israel. During Trump's final year in office, he handed out weapons and other favors to the UAE, Bahrain, Sudan, and Morocco, very constitutional, to normalize their ties with Israel without Tel Aviv ending its occupation of Palestine. While none of the countries were at war with Israel, the agreements were sold to the American public as peace deals. Remember that? Remember, and Trump was applauded. Oh, the Abraham Accords. No, it's just money. It's just money and weapons. If a deal were to happen, Biden is reportedly prepared to lavish the Saudi kings with several deals, including arms sales, nuclear technology, and a Japan-style defense pact. That'll be great, huh? Yeah, you think that'll be a treaty? No. You think that would be constitutional if it were a treaty? No. You think that if it were a treaty, the rhinos and the Dems in the Senate would approve it? Yeah. While the details of the potential deal have not been made public, Saudi Foreign Minister Prince Faisal bin Farhan said the U.S.-Saudi agreements were very, very close and most of the work has already been done. But, as John Belushi would say, but no! Not quite. Not quite. Because, of course, the folks there say that they need Israel to handle Gaza first. Yeah. And that would mean the invasion of Rafah. Tel Aviv says it eventually will invade Rafah to, you know, get a handle on those people that it already hasn't slaughtered. Awesome. That's just cool, huh? All right. Now, again, go to antiwar.com. I think that covers. And there's one other one that I wanted to mention to you. The Gaza Pier. Let me see if this is all, because there's so many stories. Oh, yeah. Israeli airstrikes on Rafah. And this is even prior to the so-called invasion. They've been doing the airstrikes now for about 2 months, as they already told people to flee to Rafah because that would be safe. Yeah, go to Rafah. It's cool. And then they started to bomb it, right? They kill at least 22, including, let me show you on the screen. It's in blue. I won't show you the whole thing, just the headline. A five-day-old baby. Okay. Yeah, and then U.S. is going to spend $320 million on the Gaza Pier, which is unnecessary if they would just open up the ground gates and stop shooting people at them to get food in there. What can you do? The best laid plans of mice and mice. Now, let's take a look at all of this spending from the United States government. And going back to 2008, they don't mention the 2008 trigger for this, but anybody who understands Austrian economics and the boom-bust cycle and inflation of the money supply knows what happens to the buying power of your currency when a politically connected central authority claims the power to tell you that you have to use that currency. And of course, then the United States government hands out weapons agreements to Saudi Arabia in the 70s to create the petrodollar. Well, the petrodollar is dying and the BRICS nations are rising. So let's find out. Now, why would anyone want to disconnect, as Gary Newman would say, from the United States or its worthless currency, from this warfare debt empire? Well, again, we turn to some good reporting from Rick Sanchez, and he says it beautifully. He's over at RT now, and this is great. Check it out, everybody.
So the Global South community, led by Brazil and India, with Russia and China not too far behind, are yearning for a more fair global currency. You know that, right? But Donald Trump has just come out recently and said that if he becomes president, he will punish those who even think about substituting the dollar for another currency. You know, ironically, the push toward de-dollarization came about because of the sanctions and other penalties that were put on Russia in 2022. After the West unplugged Russia from the global financial system entirely and seized its assets, developing economies saw that and then they asked themselves, whoa, what if they come after us? What if they do that to us? Places like Brazil and India and Iran and others started asking themselves. And that is why in January of 2023, BRICS, the Global South Group, that includes Brazil and Russia and India and China and South Africa and now many more, announced that it wants to create its own currency to bypass the U.S. dollar amid Washington's dangerous sanctions craze. Former President Trump says, "I will not let you do that." Here's his quote. "I hate when countries go off the dollar. I would not allow countries to go off the dollar because when we lose that standard, that will be like losing the Revolutionary War." Revolutionary War? Anyway, that will be a hit to our country.
Okay, so I'm going to pause it there and open it up to you because I'll put this out there as my offering to this flip, ridiculous, fantastical statement from Donald Trump. Either Donald Trump doesn't know anything about economics, or perhaps it's both, he knows and he understands that he's got to lie. Because all we have to do is look back at the $2 trillion CARES Act. And as Angry Tiger and many of us were discussing in the chat on Angry Tiger's financial report Sunday night, $2 trillion just in 2020, and it's been added to with multiple trillions since then. And now the debt is every 100 days increasing by $1 trillion. Now, just to give you an idea, I looked up some information about the overall amount of money, nearly $200 billion that's been given to Ukraine just in 2 years. The military budget of Russia annually is about $75.8 billion. So over 2 years, the United States has given Ukraine more than the entire military budgets of Russia for those 2 years. That's how much money the United States government is going into debt, which has an effect on the need for more dollars to be printed to buy those long-term U.S. dollar-based debt instruments called treasury bonds. The Fed buys them, and U.S. agencies, bureaus, get some of their budgets and buy them as well. The top two buyers of U.S. debt are the Federal Reserve and actual branches of the U.S. government, which circle around. And then, of course, when the debt comes due, they have to issue more debt, more bonds, which the cycle just perpetuates. So with all that money going out there, Donald Trump is one of the people at fault for this. And as I mentioned, and Tiger and I were discussing, I was in chat and Tiger was answering a number of the folks who were in chat. I was like, yeah. In the CARES Act, they gave the Federal Reserve the power to buy the bonds of any corporation the Fed wants to buy, and they don't have to tell anybody. And now people are talking about how corrupt that system is. And they want somebody to audit the Fed. But the Fed won't allow that. And of course, the U.S. politicians would never allow that because their corporate friends are going to get the money from the Fed and spend it and keep themselves afloat. And as I mentioned, that also has a bearing on the investments, not only of the Federal Reserve, because they're investing in many corporations that are probably near bankrupt, and they're propping them up. It has also an effect on the fascist favoritism system that already occurs thanks to the federal government and the Federal Reserve. and internationally. Tiger mentioned that this system has actually been going on a lot longer than that in various ways. And I'd love to get, I'll have to get the link from him to find out some of that information. But overtly, they put it into the CARES Act. I reported on it that week for MRC TV. I was like, what the heck is this? And Eric Schein was like, Eric, did you see this? He goes, oh my God, this is crazy. And he let me write a piece about it. I wrote a song about it. I'd like to play it for you now. So Donald Trump, what's he going to do? What is Donald Trump going to do? And already we're seeing that after the United States now for 2 years has been laying so-called sanctions on private Russian individuals, taking their yachts, taking their money, blocking certain people from Hungary just because they were going to do business with some Russian interests, blocking them from doing business in the United States, literally seizing people's money. And by the way, as an aside, I just want to mention that criticism that has been leveled against Barack Obama, he gave the Iranians the trillions of dollars, just piles of cash. That was money that was owed to the Iranian government because the United States had been holding it for decades. They see this U.S. government stole that money from Iran and they were holding it from the 70s on. It's just, you know, once you start to unravel this stuff, you just realize how incredibly filled with maggots this entire system is. It's so bad. And I hope I can warn people, or, you know, warn them off the idea that it only started with the military industrial complex and the Kennedy assassination post-World War II or something like that. Because, again, it goes back to the formation of the Constitution and the usurpation of the Articles of Confederation and the machinations of Alexander Hamilton, who wanted a central bank so that it could give out money to his friends. They couldn't get the central bank under the Articles. They didn't have a mandated taxing authority. They were relying on the states handing them tax money. The states were printing up their own paper money to pay off their debts, which was inflationary. And Alexander Hamilton realized that the war bonds that a lot of the patriotic people had bought to support the revolution were going to get paid back with virtually worthless money. And that those farmers knew it. They were worth pennies on the dollar. So he had his friends, if they were going to get paid back at all, right? They probably weren't going to get paid back. So he had his friends in banking approach a lot of these penniless farmers to say, well, you know, you helped support the revolution. I'd like to buy that off you for, say, 10 cents off every dollar that it was. You'll be making a little something, because they knew Hamilton was going to try to switch out of the Articles of Confederation and get a taxing authority and a central bank that would then pay those bankers off 100% on all the war bonds that they bought. And he did. They did. He did. They made millions. So the corruption goes all the way back to then. Okay. It's Donald Trump is just marching in line with Alexander Hamilton. And again, we'll go back a little bit. He's talking about how he won't let it happen. And don't forget, yesterday he's like, these protests have to stop. Really, Donald? Really? Are you that close to the genocidal maniacs in Israel?
A hit to our country, so says former President Donald Trump. Okay, now, here. You know, I can't help but think when I hear that, yes, it would be a hit to a country, which sounds exactly like what Washington, our country, our politicians do when they freeze the assets of other countries, when they steal the gold reserves in other countries, when they sanction the companies of other countries, and when they threaten other countries from doing business with whatever country we don't like at the time. Joining us now to discuss this is Ted Rall. He's a syndicated columnist and an author and an award-winning cartoonist. Also, Angie Wong. She's a co-host of The Final Countdown on Radio Sputnik. Thanks so much, guys, for joining us. I guess we start there. You know, it's interesting, Ted, I'll start with you, that the former president will come out and say that this is what I'm going to do because it's not fair that they would be considering taking out de-dollarization. As I recall, he was responsible for as many sanctions on countries as any other president we've had recently, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. One of the interesting aspects of Donald Trump as a political personality is that he's very, very adept at identifying problems in a way that many other American politicians are not. The problem is his proposed solutions. And this is one classic example of that.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. And by the way, they had a lot of other really good comments. You can watch Rick Sanchez's show separately if you go to the RT website. They have all the different shows labeled, and you can go down into the video segments and so on. That one I actually got because I was monitoring it live today on Rumble, and I paused it. And then what I do with my recording system is if I hear something really good, I'm like, oh, I got to catch that. That's really good. I can go back. That for a certain period of time while their stream is going, if you pause it, you can still go back a little bit and record stuff. So that's what I did. I got it. And I was really happy that I did. And, you know, and good for Rick Sanchez. He even mentions both Rick Sanchez and this woman. They both used to work more at popular networks. He's been on Fox. I think he was on CNN. And he's like, I'm so glad I'm out of that. My mindset has changed. I see things more clearly, just like Russell Brand, you know, getting away from the big Hollywood things. Now he's with Russia Today, but what he's saying is absolutely right. Now Russia, to the Russians government, is now finally going to start imposing its own sanctions against JP Morgan. So it's just going to get crazier. It's going to get crazier. And as we mentioned last night, Zelensky actually came out with a statement that a lot of people didn't think was really vetted, saying he's in the midst of a 10-year agreement with the United States, which I think would basically make Ukraine an extended vassal state of the United States. And it would be their place where the new wall, the new Iron Curtain would go up, except the curtain will be or drop down. The curtain will be dropped by the United States government. And they'll make that the new area of conflict for a new Cold War with the Russians. Okay, so that covers some of our war stuff. And I want to now take the opportunity to give you a little bit of info that hopefully you might dig. But you know what? Let me do this. Let me just turn to the chat right now and get your thoughts, everybody, before I do anything else. Because, you know, I've been putting down a lot of stuff, and I want to get your feedback on everything. First, I'm going to go over to Rumble. And Freegan says, I wish I was into hockey or any sport. Lord knows I've tried. Yeah, you know, I having grown up freaking in outside of Boston when they didn't have cable, baseball and basketball were not on national networks. They, you know, like if you're going to watch the Boston Bruins or Red Sox, basketball was on national network, but oftentimes they would have a lot of games done locally on WBZ Channel 4 for basketball. And so that was pretty neat. And for a while, they had baseball on Channel 5, which is also out of Boston. But hockey was always on UHF. And UHF, we had a really hard time getting UHF. It was always the snowstorm, the ant parade, that sort of thing. So literally trying to see a hockey game with the little puck was virtually impossible. There's a lot more coming with Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Continuing with Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Remember, you can watch and listen every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on Rockfin, Rumble, my X/Twitter at Guard Goldsmith, and now on YouTube, as long as they allow us to stay there. Thanks very much, and remember, if you want textual information, check out my Substack, the Gardner Goldsmith Substack. Let's now turn to, I think I've got it all set up for you here, this Fox News piece. And I'd like to show you a piece that I derived from Fox News that has a lot of these lessons in it. It's always, I always say it's good when a plan comes around, a plan works out. I said, let's look at Fox News, an early juxtaposition and big collectivist problem looming over everything we discuss, ranging from the campuses to the port building, although that'll come later, to the United States giving money to Israel and the refugee problem, Let's watch as Senator Kennedy appears on Fox News. And at the very beginning of it, watch the juxtaposition. That's why I put an early juxtaposition. Watch the visuals. Now, if you're just listening, then I'll describe it for you. I'll play it and then I'll pause it. Watch the juxtaposition here of images as they show a college campus and then they flash to something else. Here we go. Here's Fox News.
Overnight across the country, and you're looking at the protests in New Orleans as crews at Tulane University are clearing out what's left of its pro-Palestinian encampment after the SWAT team moved in and quickly moved everybody out. And now you can see what it was like inside there.
They had to clean out three buildings at Tulane. They had them closed for 2 days, but now they're open.
All right. Okay, now. This image that is on the screen, these past two images, and if you're listening on Free World, you didn't see them. The shot that they opened with on Fox News was from Tulane in Louisiana, okay? And it showed the police. It was a nighttime shot, and it showed the tents from those people that, as that guy, Shai Davidi, got so upset about Columbia, it showed the people who were occupying the campus there, right? Somebody at Fox News inserted before they went back to the studio, somebody at Fox News in the production side, on the editing side, inserted images from either Rafah or someplace else inside Gaza that is pulverized, just pieces of buildings all over the place. So you've got the images of the tents flipped over and tables that are, with the legs are standing up in Louisiana at Tulane. And then they immediately jump over to what the Israelis have done to the Palestinians. So you see juxtaposition and actually parallelism, because the authorities that went in to disrupt the protesters who were there on this government-supported university campus were pushed out by the police state as they see it, and I think appropriately so, because if they don't want to pay for the police, what will the police do? And their money, they are protesting. They don't want their money sent to Israel to do more of what whoever it was at Fox put in to show that difference and similarity between what the police did to those people down at Tulane, tearing up their tents, breaking up their gatherings, taking that land back for the state, for what the state deems is acceptable speech. Not that protest. Maybe a BLM protest would be appropriate for them. I don't know. But they took it back. So the power imbalance was shown at Tulane. And then, but it wasn't recognized by the Fox people on stage. But somebody behind the scenes put up these images. Again, I'm going to go back and play it for you again. Here we go.
Overnight across the country, and you're looking at the protests in New Orleans as crews at Tulane University are clearing out what's left of its pro-Palestinian encampment after the SWAT team moved in and quickly moved everybody out. And now you can see what it was like inside there.
They had to clean out three buildings at Tulane. They had them closed for 2 days, but now they're open.
All right. Meanwhile, back in Washington, we are now learning.
Now that was that. I don't know if that, I think that was intentional. That was big. And you could actually see, you could sense, what's this woman, Ainsley, whatever, in the middle. You could sort of see that they were, her voice was sort of drawn out, like, okay, back in Washington, like they were confused. Like, what is that image of what Israel is doing in Palestine up there after we showed the police clearing out the protesters who were protesting exactly what's happening in Palestine? That just reinforces the argument of the protesters. I don't think they like that at Fox News. Now, if I've got the wrong impression, you let me know. But I think I don't see any other reason than somebody in the editing booth was like, OK, I'm going to throw this in there. And I bet you they don't have a job now because that was a pretty big deal. Inside Rockfin, let me know your opinions. Inside Rumble, let me know your opinions. And Nancy, thanks for being there. And I really appreciate it that I know you're watching live and you'll catch on the rebroadcast. All my best to you, great lady. All my best. Also, Freegan, thanks for being there. And I'm wondering about Gilligan. Gilligan's Island. Yeah, I don't know. He's making references to Gilligan. I always love that show. Gilligan's Island, what a great show. Okay, and Inside X, if you want to drop your comments as well, and Inside YouTube, you let me know if you think I'm off base or not. But I think somebody did that to show that juxtaposition pretty darn well. Now, let's continue with this coverage, however, because when they bring in the senator, oh, thanks, former con, he says, you've been doing yeoman's work, Goldsmith. Thank you. I'll have to wear my my Star Trek red shirt for that. So let's continue with this. I think, and I want to get feedback on you on this, but the syllogistic approach to this, I think, is pretty clear. You've got a logic chain that you follow when you hear the senator speak, and it has a number of different prongs that come off it, but they all come together at the end, and it has to do with collectivism. So here we go.
That the White House is reportedly considering bringing certain Palestinians to the U.S. as refugees to offer them safe haven.
Fantastic. Here we at Louisiana GOP Senator John Kennedy. Senator, I guess before we even comment on that, your reaction to the way the White House has handled the pervasive unrest on college campuses.
Well, Brian, it should not go unnoticed that President Biden has the ability to stop all of this on a dime. All he's got to do is call the college presidents and say, look, if you don't get control of your campuses, I'm going to withhold your federal money.
Right. Oh, now, the president hold on a second there, my friends. Let's talk about that now. All he has to do is call the college presidents and say, if you don't get a handle of this, I'm going to withhold your money. It's not their money. It's your money. Collectivism. This is where we run into one of the major problems. As I said, Jill Stein, 72 years old. How much has she paid in taxes? Can she or can she not say, hey, my taxes have gone to the sustaining and expansion, the upkeep of this campus? I have just as much right to speak here as anybody. The people who are taking care of the grounds, the people who are the administrators making the decisions, they've been partially subsidized by me without my choice, or I'll go to jail if I don't pay those taxes. This is the tragedy of the commons, as I mentioned before. And so you have some people who don't like what's being said on the college campuses. You have other people who do like what's being said on the college campuses. You've got groups pitted against each other. You've got side groups funding various splinter groups, even agents provocateurs. And now you can't even make sense of a lot of the stuff unless you're actually there on the ground. Right? Because it's a publicly subsidized place, everybody has supposedly a right to free speech there. And we're going to hear from Judge Napolitano on this in just a little bit, because he makes some excellent points. As he spoke with, I think, Phil Girardi. And so if we look at that very closely and we hear what the senator said, he said that Biden can say, I'm going to withhold your money for that. That is the difference between public and private. And this is where I always try to bring up Marsh v. Alabama. Because people who believe that the Marsh v. Alabama decision was an appropriate decision are wrong. It is incorrect. This is the result of the very concept of public spaces. If this were actually a private university, if this were actually privately controlled and they weren't taking public money, but they still had a large green out there, a campus for their students, say it was Hillsdale College, and somebody wanted to protest at Hillsdale College, and they used the Marsh v. Alabama decision, then Hillsdale College would have to accept protests just like this. Because rather than saying, hey, you don't take any public money, they would say, yeah, we know you don't take any public money, but your place is open to the public as we define it. Therefore, since you're allowing people to cross your lawn, since you're allowing people to speak there with each other, non-college student members can meet up with others, sit on the park benches and things like that. Even though you might have rules for their behavior, we're going to make the rules for their behavior. We're going to allow anybody there. And there you get exactly the same kind of problem that you get when you get public funding for the colleges. When it's not even government taxpayer funded money, but they define something as a public place, and it doesn't matter if somebody tries to draw a distinction, well, that's for commerce and that's for this. That's the person invading the property saying, I'm coming up with reasons as to why I will leave you alone here and I won't leave you alone there. It's not the invader's decision. It's the private property owner's decision to say, leave me alone. There is a moral precept here that should not be crossed. The difference between taxpayer support that draws in everybody who thinks they have a say, appropriately so, and how it's measured, I don't know, because it's unworkable, because it's tax funded. Who gets what say? 10 times amount of say for 10 times amount of taxes put in over how much time? How much is the expense for what that person wants versus another person? It's unmanageable. This is like the example that I gave a while ago. You supposedly have a right to free speech and journalism, right? Try doing that inside a courtroom where somebody else has a right to a speedy trial. They can't coexist. They don't work. You can't get up in the middle of a courtroom and start singing. It doesn't work that way. And yet you supposedly have a right to free speech. That's because the government is the greatest charade of all time. It's the biggest boondoggle fake out you've ever imagined. They tell you they're there to protect your rights. And the only way that the government can exist is by invading your rights. They tell you that they're there to protect free speech on public grounds. If you're in the public, you have a right to speak, but you can't do that. Not on these publicly subsidized university campuses. Depending upon what they want to hear and they don't want to hear, they'll shut you down. And this is the problem with Marsh v. Alabama. If you're not familiar with the case, Marsh v. Alabama came to the Supreme Court during Roosevelt Court, 1946. It was a shipbuilding company in Alabama, and the company had a campus for their employees. They had little cottages where they could stay overnight. They had a post office, little supermarket. As I've mentioned, very similar in many ways to what the farm stand where I worked did for their Jamaican migrant workers who came up. They had cabins and stuff like that where the guys could stay. That was the McLeod family's property. That was their property. If somebody came up into the where the Jamaican guys were staying and wanted to start a barbecue near the where the Jamaican guys were trying to sleep or wanted to play a concert or something like that, no way. It's not the interloper's decision as to how that land will be managed, even if there are a bunch of people staying there or working there. That is private property. But the Marsh v. Alabama decision came about because this woman from somewhere around the area came and was handing out religious pamphlets on the campus, on the business campus. And they called the cops to arrest her for trespass. They asked her to leave and she wouldn't leave. She was, I don't remember, was like Seventh-day Adventist or something like that. And she wouldn't leave. So they charged her for trespass. She appealed and went to the Supreme Court. The highly collectivist Supreme Court ruled that if it is open to the public, it is so-called de facto or de jure under this legal decision. It is so-called public property. But it's not public property. It's private property. Public property takes your money, and then you have to try to figure out how you can get something out of it as everybody else argues over it, whether it's a school or a park or whatever. That's taxpayer-funded public property. Just because something is open to the so-called public doesn't mean that the people who run it can't change their parameters based on contract, or they might even breach the contract. Then the person who had the original contract can sue them for that. Or they could put up a stipulation saying, at any time, if you enter here, we can come up with new rules to say we don't want you here. Just like somebody entering the home, you enter under my prerogatives. You enter under my stipulations, not yours. Now, you can have your own stipulations. If they want you to join them on their place because, say, it's a restaurant or somebody's having a party, they'd like you to come over, you can say, well, protect yourself from, you know, cowabunga 19? You know, what kind of food do you have? What kind of music? A lot of different preferences, right? Do you smoke? What do you, you know, you can decide for yourself as well. And they can't rope you in. Imagine if that company had kidnapped that woman and brought her onto the land. Would the government say it's perfectly acceptable for them to keep her there? Of course not. But this is what government does to you when they say that your private property is not private. They kidnap you. They squat on your life. Government is the ultimate squatter. They are the occupier. And so it is amazing the double standards that so many people have, whether it's that guy Shai Davidi who got upset that people were occupying a land in New York while he supports the occupation by Israel of the land in Palestine. It's like, duh. And at the same time, we have people who supposedly support conservative values and things like that, but they will make their own distinctions as to how private property can be used before they decide that it's public property. It's very clear. If there's no tax money being used on it, it's private property. It's not public. Now, again, the facet that hinges on this, where some people can agree to disagree, is whether or not that particular business asked for corporate status from the government. But there I roll into, and I mentioned it in one of my pieces for MRC TV about Tennessee and the gun thing. Then we run into, for the teachers, the permission to allow teachers to use firearms if they go through all these different caveats and get training and do all these things, right? They have a right to carry a firearm. The problem is public property, taxpayer-funded property, the right to keep and bear arms upsets a lot of people who are taxpayers. So you've got a right, but the taxpayers have a right to their property. It's being taken for the school, and the person who's being employed there doesn't necessarily have to ask for a job there. Well, there we get to the unconstitutional conditions portion that I mentioned last night. Unconstitutional conditions, the general idea, you can go to the Ithaca or Cornell Law, for the citations. They're in my article from MRC TV. It's hyperlinked. And so unconstitutional conditions, the general idea that has come down through most cases, but not all, is that the government cannot force you to give up a constitutional right just because you're getting a government benefit. As I said, I think they would be inconsistent if that were challenged on the supposed security they provide us by the TSA, because they routinely, as part of their job, breach the Fourth Amendment. They also take stuff from us in order for us to get to the planes, which is a breach of the Eighth Amendment. So these are important things to bring up as we look at this story a little bit more from Fox, because we see Senator Kennedy say, well, Biden can just withhold the money. He should just withhold the money and it would stop immediately. So what does that tell us? That tells us that he thinks that government funding for something should come with strings, and that he has the right idea about how that public place should be run. But the protesters and the ralliers there who might have relatives who are being wiped out by government bombs being given to Israel, they have different ideas. So who's going to agree to disagree? If you have a private paradigm, then the universities can handle this. Now, there are a couple other things that I want to bring up real quick. Last night, I mentioned that thanks to Schumer, about 2 years ago, they passed a statute. And I want to make sure that I phrase this more precisely than last night, because it was just coming to mind last night. The statute stipulates that any company that's doing business with a contract with the federal government cannot divest from investments with Israel. So these universities not only get grants from the federal government, almost all of them, except for Hillsdale and Grove City, they also oftentimes have contracts. As I mentioned, MIT has tons of contracts, right, with DARPA and stuff like that. Harvard's got lots of contracts. They all of them, right? So these college administrators are under a lot of pressure, because if they divest, I mean, I should say boycott, if they boycott, if any of these businesses boycott Israel, I should say, then they will not be allowed to get any more federal government contracts. Okay. So the federal government, they find that you've boycotted Israel, then you're not going to get any more contracts. So I don't know how it works to not do business, and somehow the government could call that a boycott. What are they going to, you have to do business with Israel, otherwise it's a boycott. I don't know how they define it. I guess you have to officially say that you're boycotting them. But what if you're just not doing business with Israel? That's part of the problem with Schumer's proposal that they passed a couple years ago. But you can't boycott Israel, right, if you're a government contractee. Well, what happens with the universities if they divest? Is that going to be considered a boycott? This is one of the prongs of pressure. The other prong of pressure, of course, military-industrial complex. They've got a lot invested in these trusts. They're basically investment and investment facets for the universities, right? Then you've got the Israeli lobby, very big on the congressmen and also on the administrators. Not as big on a lot of the teachers and professors who are there, who seem to be siding more with the Palestinian, pro-Palestinian protesters. So here's a little bit more from Kennedy, because it opens up even more. We'll be back with more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Check us out Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Rockfin, Rumble, YouTube, and my ex at Gard Goldsmith. And remember to check out my Substack, the Gardner Goldsmith Substack, for more liberty-oriented news. Continuing with Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Remember, you can watch and listen every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on Rockfin, Rumble, my X slash Twitter at Gard Goldsmith, and now on YouTube, as long as they allow us to stay there. Thanks very much, and remember, if you want textual information, check out my Substack, the Gardner Goldsmith Substack. So here's a little bit more from Kennedy, because it opens up even more. Check this out.
Done that. The moral of the story is you're never too old to suck. The reason he hasn't done that is because of politics. CNN just came out with a poll. It said that 52% of likely voters in America will not vote for President Biden under any circumstances. They would vote for the guy who salts the fries at McDonald's before they would vote for President Biden. And the White House knows this, so they're scared to alienate the not insubstantial Hamas wing of the Democratic Party. Yeah. So that's what's behind a lot of this.
Well, yes, Senator, the fries are delicious.
They are
good.
That guy does. I'm not saying that guy's not qualified to be president. I mean, history shows anybody can do it.
You know, Senator, we know the history of the Jewish people and all the persecution over thousands and thousands of years. Where are the people standing up for our Jewish friends? That country, that's our ally.
I don't know about you, but I'm getting a little tired of people who actually don't cite history and just spout that line over and over and over again. Just ridiculous. Which Jewish people? It's so stupid. It's so dumb to just spout that line. You know, it's such a platitude. It's ridiculous.
Committed to helping them and helping their people. And we're watching and listening to these interviews with Jewish students who can't even walk on their own campuses, have paid $70,000 a year to be able to get an education, and they can't even walk around and feel safe.
Well, I think most Republicans are standing up. Some Democrats are. Many Democrats are scared to. But because, let me say it again, Angel, there's a substantial Hamas wing of the Democratic Party. And they believe in diversity, equity, inclusion, and the right to kill Jews. And some of my Democratic colleagues, not all of them, but they're scared of them.
Yeah.
Some universities are handling this well. Tulane, Vanderbilt, University of Florida. They have good leadership. I know their presidents. Their presidents passionately support free speech. But they know the Constitution doesn't protect disruptive behavior.
Well, Senator.
Okay, so I'm going to just ask you, hold on to that disruptive behavior line, because many times the way this is portrayed, they portray peaceful protesters or ralliers as disruptive when it's the cops that come in, like what they did to Jill Stein with their bicycles, flipping them at a 72-year-old woman. And it's all on camera. So people are going to be picking and choosing all these different types of things. This is becoming a hot potato to try to get the visual message out there. And it's becoming unmanageable unless someone has some real long-term video footage of this stuff, right? These little clips now are becoming very useless. However, sometimes there is a little nugget that pops out. In this case, I want to check out the next nugget coming as they start talking about the refugees, the Biden proposal to bring over migrants, and listen to what the senator says about Egypt, because this ties it into the university problem. Check this out.
You know, we haven't heard much from the president regarding this, but you know what they could do? And you're on the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Uh-huh.
The Department of Justice should open an investigation into, you know, we've heard that the people who took over the building here in New York, it sounds like they were, for the most part, all the leaders were outside agitators. It sounds like there is some sort of a conspiracy. We had a former federal prosecutor on about 2 hours ago who said they could be charged with conspiracy. They could use RICO stuff. We could figure out who is behind this and who's funding it.
So pause it right there. Does that remind you of what the Democrats were saying about the January 6th ralliers who entered the Capitol? First of all, again, just to remind the Fox News team, people's tax money is being spent on those universities. Whether they go to the university or they don't becomes irrelevant at that point. That's the point. You can't manage a public system. It doesn't work. And the money is unconstitutionally given to them in the first place. So we've got a senator, a Republican senator, saying, oh, he should just threaten to withdraw the money. Hey, Senator, I thought you swore an oath to the Constitution. Rather than using it as leverage to get the speech you think is good or bad removed or added or removed to the college campus, why don't you conform to your vaunted Constitution and stop being such a fatuous man about town regarding where you're going to go and what you're going to do on which clause of the Constitution you think is important? It would be nice if you actually were consistent, but you're not. There's nothing in your Constitution that lets Joe Biden give out or take away somebody else's money for college. It doesn't exist. And it would be nice if you actually went to that point, rather than trying to say, I want to see this done on the campuses, and this is how it should be done by Biden. And this is a great example of it. Those taxpayers, they are taxpayers, and if they want to squat on the lawn of some university that received their money, they have a moral okay to do so because their money was taken from them for it.
Well, I don't know about the conspiracy part, though I will say, we probably need to get some new conspiracy theories because all the old ones turned out to be true. I do know that President Biden could stop this on a dime. All he's got to do is pick up the phone and quietly call the president of Colombia and say, listen, Madam President, I give you 14 days to get this straight, or I'm going to withhold all of your federal money.
Sure. Right.
And you would see the leadership at Columbia pounce on that like a ninja, man. They would get it straight.
Right, absolutely. And then it would protect them from their crazy boards that don't want them to do anything, Senator. I just got to ask you.
The problem is the faculty. The problem in a lot of these places, not all, but many, it's the faculty. They're seeing it.
They're sitting in the encampments.
Yeah, the faculty members think they're right. And they'll hurt you if you disagree with them.
So, Senator, I just got to get you to comment on the Palestinian situation. So are you encouraged that we're going to start?
You know how the faculty are. They're going to hurt you sitting there. Right. I mean, I'm crossing what the Fox News guy said with what Senator Kennedy said. But clearly they're not getting their signals right. Most of these protesters have been peaceful throughout much of this, throughout almost all of this. Now it's becoming too muddy. But the clarity of this distinction between private and public becomes very clear. The clarity of the fact that the Constitution doesn't allow the federal government to hand money out like this, the clarity of the fact that the president can't just call up the National Guard to do this, and the clarity of how unmanageable a Marsh v. Alabama decision from 1946 is, comes to us right with this, and we'll go to the Egypt story. Here we go.
Bringing in Palestinian refugees because we're out of illegal aliens.
So this is the Palestinian refugees thing, and he rolls Egypt into it. Sorry to jump ahead there.
Well, I, number one, I think Congress is going to have something to say about that, Brian. Number two, those refugees need to go to Egypt. Now, Egypt is there was just a big article in The Economist magazine. Egypt will allow Palestinian refugees to come in as long as you pay $5,000.
Okay, so now I'm going to pause it right there. So again, previously, we've talked about how Netanyahu is saying, oh, the Egyptians should allow those refugees in there. And it's just immoral for them to not allow the people that were bombing and slicing up and destroying all their families to not allow those refugees that we're displacing to go in there. I mean, it's incredibly disingenuous and just pure evil. It's unbelievable and massively hubristic. I mean, imagine how conceited somebody's got to be to say, well, I come from this country, but over in that other country, they should definitely accept the people that we're displacing. I mean, it's just like, what are you talking about? And it just shows, I mean, the guy's deranged, right? But what's fascinating about this is, you know, we talked about it here on Liberty Conspiracy previously, that arrogance is just stark. You know, it's like being blinded by the sun. Like, what did I just see? That was amazing. You're telling the Egyptians that they got to bring in more of the people you're displacing. You're a scumbag. Jeezum. So obviously he thinks he can rule Egypt, right? And Kennedy does the same thing here. He's like, the Egyptians should bring him in, but they're charging $5,000 per person. Can you imagine? But he adds something to this, and it shows you again how corrupt things are. And it ties into the money going to the universities, where Washington says we should have some say over what they say on the universities. We rule those universities. We can control and describe what is good or bad speech there. And Joe Biden should say, shut down that speech, but leave that speech going, or we're going to withhold your money, right? Watch this when he talks about Egypt. This is amazing. And it all ties together. The incredible blindness to their own arrogance, their own hegemonic claims of power through the redistribution of your tax money. Now he translates it into U.S. power over Egypt. Check it out.
Okay. That's unacceptable. We give billions of dollars to Egypt. The IMF bails them out every other Thursday with our permission. President Biden needs to call Egypt and tell them to do their part.
But the problem is the Palestinians create unrest in every country they go into, including Egypt. And they say we're not going to be that.
So, you know, it's interesting. He says the Palestinians create unrest in every country they go into. I think what he means is the Palestinians create unrest in every country to which they are moved after they've been forcibly removed from their homes. I don't know. I just, you know, it's kind of crazy to actually look at it realistically. But, you know, when they were there before 1947, I don't know. They weren't jumping all over the place and being moved in boats to different countries and having the president of one nation state call up somebody to say, you better bring these refugees in and not charge them $5,000 as, your Israeli neighbors blast them to pieces. I don't know. It's kind of strange. It wasn't happening. But for some reason, now, as they discuss bringing in refugees to the United States from the place that the United States has been helping to destroy, I don't know, people are a little worried. Maybe they'd be a little upset. What a crazy, it's absolutely nuts. And this guy, Kennedy, is not one of the worst guys out there, right? He's done great stuff, holding people's feet to the fire on the climate things and stuff. He exposes a lot of people. He goes through a lot of logical taekwondo or something like that, right? A lot of logical martial arts. He does that, but he's not being logical here. because he has certain assumptions that are very, very clear, that the United States can tell foreign governments that they have to accept people because, of course, the United States gives them money, or that the president can, because the United States government gives universities money, tell the universities what kind of speech is acceptable or what isn't acceptable on their campuses. So it's a pretty amazing clip to see. And I was blown away by just how much it reveals. So I'd like to ask you, what other questions can one ask to draw out greater learning there? So put your comments into X or Rockfin or Rumble. And I appreciate everybody being so kind as to watch. And former con member says the enemy is the current rally cry. Oh, Occult Priestess, thanks for being there. Absolutely. Great to see you. And Freegan's over. He says, Guard. Oh, hey, thanks, Freegan. Guard is a genius at parallelism. Paralleling anarchist philosophy alongside pure and proper conservatism. The pragmatic approach to operationalizing an anarchist society optimally manifests as conservatism. Well, that's a pretty darn good point, especially, I think, Freegan, if you can separate things into smaller decentralized areas of control. That's why I like, you know, the old tribal system of the Brehon Law and the Viking Age Iceland system and stuff like that. And, you know, I usually bring them up. It's fascinating writing by great people like Kevin Flanagan and so on. So now, for a little bit of something, I think I'm just going to go with this just real quick. A couple quick news stories to tell you as a little bit of a palate cleanser from that stuff. Then I want to go back to it because there's some other big stuff there. But I made some notes here because I did want to mention that down in Congress, yeah, you might have seen this, members of the EcoHealth Alliance are actually testifying on Capitol Hill. And also, there's a very good piece. If you'll find this on my Twitter/X, and I might play it tonight, but I'll probably play it tomorrow as I focus more on economic stuff. And I might even have to switch that tariff thing into tomorrow. I'm going to try to do the tariff thing tonight, but it would actually go very well with the tariff thing to show the pressures that political machinations put on your wallet and your plans and the plans for your kids. 45%, says Pete St. Ange, is the new proposed capital gains tax from Joe Biden. 45% capital gains tax. And the stuff is already taxed on the corporate level. It's already taxed as an income tax, and then they want to tax it again. And don't forget, certain people want to tax you for unrealized capital gains. In other words, you haven't made any money. You haven't sold it. It just went up in value, and you're still holding it. They want to tax that. Talk about destroying savings. Just ridiculous. Now let's jump into something that is a semi-palate cleanser, although you might find the person rather distasteful from many of his positions in the past. Here's the question that I pose. Is this person better than AOC? Perhaps, but Michael M's inconsistency remains consistent. Who's the subject here? Well, folks, I know. It's the beautiful mind of Michael Moore, who was on CNN talking, in this case, kind of the right way, I think, about Palestine. But again, approaching it the way AOC did in that clip we showed last night, first from the political standpoint, not the moral standpoint, talking about how this is going to hurt Joe Biden. Young people aren't going to vote for him because of Palestine. Check this out. But he's not as bad as AOC. Check it out.
With what Netanyahu has done here, and you can stop the killing tonight. You pull the plug. You close the bank. You shut it down. Doesn't mean we're not going to support Israel, protect Israel. Absolutely.
Yeah, there you go.
Today, 81% of voters who are under the age of 35 disapprove of how President Biden has been handling this war. I mean, we're seeing it on campuses. There is a question of what we're going to see in November. I wonder what you think he should be doing differently to change those numbers.
Thank you for asking that question, Caitlin. This is why I was so, when I got the call to ask if I'd like to come on tonight, I really was coming on. I know we're speaking to
that showed today 81% of voters who are under the age of 35 disapprove of how President Biden has been handling this war. I mean, we're seeing it on campuses. There is a question of what we're going to see
in November. I wonder what you think he should be doing differently to change those numbers.
Thank you for asking that question, Caitlin. This is why I was so, when I got the call to ask if I'd like to come on tonight, I really was coming on. I know we're speaking to millions of people, but I'd like to speak to one particular individual, and that is President Biden. I wanted to say this on your show tonight, that his chance of not being reelected, I think at this point, is so great because of those numbers, because he's losing the youth vote. He's lost the Arab American vote in Michigan. So even Michelle Goldberg, in a column in the New York Times last month, said that you lose Michigan, you lose the election. I am fighting to make sure that doesn't happen. I am trying to save Joe Biden, because as soon as he does the right thing, as soon as he, and if you're listening, watching Mr. Biden, fellow Catholic, although some will say recovering in my case, but still, we are Catholics, and the Pope is right on this. We need an immediate ceasefire. It is wrong. A mass.
Okay, so right there, I want to pause it, and I want to be as fair as possible to him. And it's actually a good thing that little clip showing him talking about the morals part of it, which came in the latter part of what he said on CNN here, it actually is good that it came in, and I forgot to sort of splice that out. I had to do some editing on it, because when I was recording it, they kept having ads pop up, so I had to find, once you know how it is, sometimes you run a video, and then if you run it again, that ad won't pop up the second time, because you've already run through it, so you've already seen the ad, so you can watch it clean. So that's what I had to do a couple times on this one. But in this case, what I think is interesting here is she introduces the poll numbers, right? So she sort of steers the conversation in that direction. And then he gets into the moral aspect of it. And I have many disagreements with Michael Moore. I have some agreements with him on some piece things, okay? Unfortunately, he hasn't been consistent on a constitutional level. He's doing a good job here, and he gets into how Joe Biden is losing support because she brings up the polling. And, you know, he makes a very good point. But if you notice right in here, I'm just going to play this little bit again here. Okay, just go back just a little bit here. All right, here we go. If you notice, this is where he goes with this trajectory.
So great because of those numbers, because he's losing the youth vote. He's lost the Arab American vote in Michigan. So even Michelle Goldberg, in a column in the New York Times last month, said that you lose Michigan, you lose the election. I am fighting to make sure that doesn't happen.
Now, my question is, why would he want to fight to make sure that the man who already has fed these weapons to Israel knowingly, now maybe he doesn't have the information that we've been covering here, all the internal reports, all the different people from USAID who say, yes, they're starving people, you know, but he can see what's been going on there. He can see the pulverized cities. He can see the way they move people down into Rafah, and now they're going to attack Rafah. He can see procedurally what they have done step by step to eradicate these people, how they don't distinguish between civilians and Hamas. They never tell us which ones are the Hamas guys. They lie all the time. And of course, they're unconstitutionally getting the weapons. So there are so many levels that he could address here, and he could have addressed them a long time ago. And yet he wants Joe Biden to get reelected? I don't understand that. Now, this is one of these areas where, you know, there are many areas where I really don't like what Michael Moore did in his Bowling for Columbine film, what he did to Charlton Heston, the way he selectively edited certain things and deceived people in many, many ways. What he did personally to Charlton Heston, going to his house and not leaving Charlton Heston's house as Mr. Heston invited him in to have lunch and talk about firearms and then asked him to leave. And he and the camera people wouldn't leave. Heston left his own house and walked down the street. That's what a courageous guy Charlton Heston was. And what a nice, friendly, noble person he was to invite these guys in and make them lunch. So I don't like that. Okay. There's room for, you know, people to discuss, to say, hey, you know, what do you feel bad about having done that? You know, do I have the wrong impression here? But that's a pretty well-known story. And I've seen the footage from the film. And there are a bunch of other things that he deceived people with in Bowling for Columbine. And there are other things he's done that have been deceptive in other films as well. But his stance on 9/11 has been pretty good, and his stance in other areas slightly pretty good sometimes, you know. He goes over, unfortunately, into the idea that the federal government should have some say over what happens in Flint, Michigan, over the pipes and so on. So he takes a tragedy there and misinterprets where the federal government should step in, that sort of stuff. And here, this is what's missing. First, my question to Mr. Moore would be, not Dennis Moore, although this guy is very much in favor of redistribution of wealth. And he hasn't learned his lesson the way Dennis Moore did at the end of the skit, is why do you want to see Joe Biden reelected? At what point are you going to say Joe Biden is complicit and has been complicit? Why would you morally give your thumbs up to that guy? I don't understand that. And it's not a matter of, well, I think the other guy would be worse. That's not a consideration. You are giving your moral acceptance and your moral promotion to see this man reelected, to promote him to more success on the ballot box. How can you do that? How can you tie yourself morally to this man who already has shown to stand so completely against what you think is right? Thank you for listening to Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. And remember, you can watch us every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. at Rockfin, Rumble, now YouTube, and my Twitter/X, which is at Guard Goldsmith. And do remember, you can visit my Substack anytime for even more liberty-oriented news.
If you want to move to the free state, and you're looking for some real estate, well, I know a guy who's really great. It's the Realtor Mark Warda.
Now you can learn more about the awesome things happening here in New Hampshire in our march toward liberty in our lifetime. Our friends at Porcupine Real Estate are hosting a series of webinars to educate you on the expanded freedoms enjoyed by New Hampshire citizens. Reserve your seat today at move.freetalklive.com. Topics include gun freedom, medical freedom, and political freedom victories. They also have a couple on best practices for moving to the free state and finding housing. These webinars are super helpful and free to attend once you've registered at move.freetalklive.com. Visit their YouTube channel, Porcupine Real Estate, for videos from past presentations and sign up for upcoming webinars for free at move.freetalklive.com.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.